So welcome to LSE's visit day. I hope it's been informative and helpful and enjoyable so far. As I say, we're running a little bit late, so perhaps that's because the welcome talk was a roller coaster ride of excitement for you for the first 15 minutes, I hope so. My name's Kath Baldwin. I'm the Director of Recruitment Admissions at the school. My colleagues here today are Hannah Bannister, who's the Head of Student Services, Sue Plater, who's the Financial Support Manager, and most importantly, Emma Deeth, who's a parent of a current student. And I don't want to add any pressure onto Emma, but I can just say that this is always the best part of the day, I think, from the visiting parents' perspective, to hear things straight from the horse's mouth from somebody who's actually living the dream as a parent of an LSE student. So if you do choose to switch off for the first 15 or 20 minutes of the talk today, please do wake up for Emma, because it'll be the best part of the day, I promise you. No pressure. So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to my colleague Hannah Bannister, who's going to talk a little bit about the student services on offer at the school.
Thank you, Kath. I'll do my best to keep you awake for the first 15 minutes, so bear with me. So we've got a little bit of information about the general degree structure, 3 years full-time study for our undergraduate programmes. Students will typically study 4 courses, and towards the end of the first year and the beginning of the second year, they will also take the LSE 100, which is our bespoke course, which encourages students to think about world issues as social scientists, and it's also designed to sort of broaden the academic experience and develop some critical thinking skills. Degrees are a mixture of core and compulsory courses, but we also allow students to take some optional courses, which is student choice led. Teaching is a combination of lectures and classes. All classes and all coursework is compulsory. And we put significant emphasis on independent study. So although the studying itself is intense, we want all of our students to graduate as independent thinkers and learners. So we teach during the Michaelmas and the Lent terms, which start in October and January. The summer term is largely given over then to revision and the dreaded examinations. So all students are allocated an academic advisor. That advisor will be based in the department of the programme of study. They can advise on academic and personal matters. They will help with course selection for those option modules. They will monitor all students' progress, so they'll just check that everyone is actually turning up to class and moving along with their studies. And they can also facilitate access to other support services should one of their advisees actually need that. So we've got quite an array of support. So the academic advisor that I've just mentioned, each department has a departmental tutor who sort of oversees the work of the academic advisors as a group, so another departmental-based source of support. We'll come on to some of these services in a little while, but the grouping of the Student Services Centre, Disability Counselling, the Medical Centre, the Gender Advisors, the Faith Centre, the Student Union, the Mentors and the Hall Wardens are all clustered around the academic provision. And we have a Dean of Undergraduate Studies who works across the whole school, looking after all undergraduate students who might need just a little bit more support than the academic advisor or departmental tutor might be able to provide. So the Student Services Centre is an administrative hub, and we look after initial registration when everybody joins the school. We do run the examinations and look after results and calculate awards. And we run the graduation ceremonies, which are a huge celebration, really quite good fun. We manage student records. We house the financial support team that Sue is going to talk to you about in a bit. We look after the academic regulations. And we have a specialist pair of visa and immigration advisors to help any student that needs it navigate their way through the, shall we say, mess that is the UK immigration system. If you think LSE paperwork is bad, try the Home Office. And we will also, obviously, direct any students who come in with generic queries to the right service to suit their needs or to answer their questions if we can't provide that when they arrive. We also run a student mentoring scheme. This year we've trained a group of current students to help support new students coming in who are not based in halls. So not every new student will choose to be in halls. There are bespoke mentors within halls, and we wanted to try and focus on students who don't have that natural grouping amongst their peers. So they will provide pre-arrival support. They'll make contact before students actually get to us. They have a meeting during orientation week to do introductions and make sure that everybody knows who they are. And then they'll follow up throughout the year with group meetings, individual meetings, if that's what suits them best. And it's another way to help new students make some friends. And we also make sure that the mentors know about all of the support services that we have so that they can help direct anyone that's unsure as well. So the library, it's the largest academic social science library in the world. 4 million separate items, and that's just within the library. Obviously, then there's a huge range of online journals and other sources available. It was redesigned by Foster and Partners for quite a large sum of money. It does look quite spectacular inside. And we also run long opening hours to make sure that students can access the services when it suits them rather than necessarily when it might suit us. The Academic and Professional Development Service houses the Careers Service and the Language Centre and the Teaching and Learning Centre. So the Careers Centre has one-to-one advice, and that's just individual, either drop-in or booked sessions. They run seminars and workshops and group sessions on things like CVs, interviews, searching for jobs. They hold events when employers will come in, talk to students, and they have a job shop, so you know, we're actually looking at getting students into work actively. Do stop in and see the careers stand in the Sorswee Hock Centre this afternoon. The Language Centre does have undergraduate degree options. They have language and society courses. They've actually got over 2,000 students using their centre, and very useful English for academic purposes. Obviously writing for academic purposes is not quite the same as just writing exam questions and things that quite a lot of students might have done before they get here, so that's sort of runs along parallel to the academic programmes that students register on. Teaching and Learning Centre, it will introduce students to studying at a university, very different to the way students tend to learn in school. They will help with essay writing skills, how to make the best of actually being in a class and how to engage in seminars. They'll help with presentation skills. We do a fair amount of assessment through presentation. And they will also help with preparing for exams and coping with being anxious about exams. So that's delivered as large-scale lectures, workshops, practical sessions, and they'll provide one-to-one advice as well. And I recommend having a surf around their website. The Teaching and Learning Centre also houses our counselling service. It is entirely confidential. There are one-to-one sessions. Sometimes group sessions work quite well if it's things like stress management. Sometimes acclimatisation can be quite difficult and they can help with that. And they also run sessions for our students on perfectionism and procrastination. You'd be surprised how popular those are. And we also have a disability and wellbeing service. So individual student support agreements are written up in collaboration with the student, and that just sets out for departments and for any other services such as the library, for the Student Services Centre, and also for examinations, about whether there's any particular adjustments that need to be made. And that will cover things like neurodiversity, so dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia. But any other sort of long-term medical conditions, not necessarily strictly a disability. They're extremely engaged with the students and they do work across the whole school again. And disability service, again, will be available in the Sorswee Hock Student Centre. And then we have the Students' Union, who are based in the new centre, and they will provide advice direct to students. There are 4 sabbatical officers who look after different facets of student life. They have student club nights. The venue is actually pretty good. And there are over 150 clubs and societies running from sort of athletics and sports to some of the more sort of academic and disciplinary based societies. They have a media group and they also look after the sports facilities. So we have a very active union and all students are defaulted into membership of the union when they begin. So I'm going to hand over to Sue, who's our financial support manager, and she's going to tell you a bit more about finance. Okay, well, I'm going to talk about the rather important subject of money, and I'm going to start with the bad news, which is how much everything costs. So we look at the costs in two... Oh, hello, aspects. one is the tuition fees charged by the school, and the second bit is what it will cost your student to live in London. So starting with the tuition fees, the fee for home UK and EU students will be £9,000 in the coming year, and it will be £16,392 for anybody with overseas status. There is an annual inflationary increase assumed, but however, the £9,000 is set by the government, so we don't know whether that will inflate or not, so that's really for the overseas figures. For living costs, we assume that students will require around £1,000 a month while they're here in London. We do know students can live on less, and we know that some students would like to live on more and do live on more. Those that live on less, they take advantage of student discounts, and they look at the better deals. They might share rooms in hall or so on. So there are options, and there's quite a lot of guidance on the website, particularly about accommodation, what the different costs are. So starting just with how the fees can be paid now, for home UK and EU students, there is the fee loan available from the UK government. It's lent by the student loan company and it's lent for students in England through Student Finance England. The loan is repayable after graduation, and I'll talk a little bit about repayment, and it's not means tested. Anyone who is due to pay a fee who's from the UK or EU can borrow the money for it. Alternatively, you might prefer to pay the fee yourself, in which case you can pay upfront in full, or you can mix it and borrow some. The student can borrow some and you can provide them with other money. The overseas students don't have the option of the loan, and for both those who are paying themselves and both UK and overseas, there's a system for paying in instalments once you're here. Looking a bit more at the fee loan, I mentioned it's administered by the student loan company. You apply for this via gov.uk. At the same time, it's a one system for applying for a loan for fees, a loan for maintenance, and any grant that your student is eligible for. And we do advise applying early, just to, because the form can take a bit of time and you might need to gather information and so on. So it's a good idea to get going with it. They've not set a deadline yet, but they will at some point, I think, in the year, email everyone and say you need to get your forms in. But basically, if you apply early and get everything sorted, then your student will get their loan right at the start of term. The tuition fee loan is paid directly to the university in three instalments over the year, the first year, well, each year. But the maintenance loan is paid to the student also in instalments. So the tuition fee loan doesn't go through the student's account, it comes straight to us. Interest is charged on the two loans together, so at all at the same rate. I mentioned students in England apply through Student Finance England. There are slightly different arrangements for Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. They're pretty comparable, but you do need to go for the relevant authority and look at what's on offer. I think it's still the case that Welsh students get a bit of a better deal than everyone else because part of their fee is given by grant and part is
loaned. But otherwise, the system is the same. There is availability to borrow for fees and borrow for maintenance. The repayment of loans, I've probably read stuff in the press recently about the problem the government is having with collecting loan repayments from those who graduated on the old scheme, on the lower fees. This is because the loans are collected through earnings. They're not collected directly from the student in the way that, a loan to buy a car would be, or a mortgage. They are paid, they're almost like PAYE. So they're collected through the earnings system, either PAYE if you are employed or through a self-assessment system. Nothing is payable until the student, with the loans that are being borrowed at the moment at the 9,000 fee level, nothing is payable until the student is earning £21,000 after graduation. And then after they are earning £21,000, 9% of their income is deducted each month above £21,000 earning. So an example there, if they're earning £25,000, they will be paying £30 a month in addition to their tax and NI that will come off their payslip. So although it affects their net income, you can see that it varies how much it's going to affect them. And the problem the government have got at the moment is not enough graduates are earning above the rate, or if they are earning above the rate, they're not earning enough to pay the sort of sums of money that were expected. So this is the current system, and I'm sure it won't change in terms of how repayment is done, but it will be interesting to see how they're going to deal with the problems they're getting. The other advantage of this loan, in a way, is that it's written off after 30 years. So basically, if a student is a low earner through that whole time, they're never going to pay back the capital or the interest, and it will be written off. If they're a high earner, they'll probably pay it back pretty quickly, and then the 30 years is irrelevant. But there is a cut-off point. Student loans don't go on credit files. They don't affect your ability to take out other loans like mortgages, but they just affect your net income. I mean, I should say that LSE has a good reputation for graduates going into better-paid jobs, but the overall system, as you can see, is at the moment fairly favourable to the students in that sense of not paying from earning just the minimum amount. So for living costs, there is a maximum grant, that should say, of £3,387 a year, and the grant levels vary according to your household income. The maximum amount of income for which you're eligible for a grant is £42,611, and the grant is graded according to income. Oh, that's what the missing words. For the loan is partially means tested. So if you opt not to be means tested, then 65% of the figures there are available. So for those coming to university in London, the maximum loan will be £7,751. If you do opt to be means tested, then you'll get more than the 65%, and it'll run alongside the grant, which will also be looked at in the means testing. So as I mentioned at the start, one form for everything. If you opt to be means tested, they will then let you know what you're going to get. If you don't opt to be means tested, you get the tuition fee loan and 65% of the maintenance loan. And the loan is paid to the student. So the website is gov.uk, the same one that does driving licences and car tax and so on. And it's under student finance. And the best way to do it is with an online application. They've just changed all their helpline numbers so that they reduce the cost that they were charging people to listen to them on the phone, confuse you. But we can help, as well as the student loan company, in taking you through the process if necessary. And my office, our website gives details of our phone number, and we're happy to talk to you because we are obviously seeing a lot of people on loans and grants. And I'm going to move on now to what LSE offers aside from what the government offers by way of bursaries, scholarships, the National Scholarship Programme, and a couple of other funds I'll mention at the end. So for anybody who is eligible for a grant, they will also be eligible for an LSE bursary. And it will be done through the same process. Once you've applied to Student Finance notify us that the student is eligible for a bursary, and we approve the bursary, and it's paid in the same way as the loan in three instalments. And those are the levels. The maximum bursary is 4,000, the minimum is 750. I think you've had in your pack some information about student finance, and certainly my team have got a stand and they've got leaflets with all this sort of numbers information in. So UK bursaries, as I mentioned, come through the student finance assessment. EU bursaries and discretionary bursaries, we assess them within the office, and there's a form to fill in for that, which is also relevant for any of our scholarships. The EU bursaries and discretionary bursaries. The discretionary bursaries are just for those people who get caught sometimes in a system where they might have one form of nationality and one domicile, and student finance can't work out what to do with them, but they're sort of EU-UK mixed. We can deal with that separately, but the rates are exactly the same as for the standard bursaries. And then the National Scholarship Programme, which was a system invented by the government when they approved the larger fee rate of 9,000. And it was set up as a three-year pilot, and they've already declared it's going to end at the end of the 3 years. So the 2014 intake are the last group to get this. It's actually a valuable award for anybody whose income is at the lower bracket, particularly those who are on benefit and so on, because it's taxable income that's looked at. So students starting in 2014 who've got a household income of up to 7,000 will receive this award. 3,000 is paid by the government, and that's given in the first year, 1,000 as a cash bursary, and 2,000 towards accommodation if you're going to live in Hall. And in the second and third year, there's a further 1,500 in each year, and that is, again, ideally given to accommodation, but will be given as a cash bursary if the student is not in Hall. So it's like the grant, it doesn't have to be repaid. And then the other benefits that don't have to be repaid are LSE scholarships. And we are fortunate at LSE with a number of alumni who very generously give scholarships to enable people to study here because they had a good experience. They want that to happen for others. So there's a range available to UK and EU and overseas students, actually. And so for the coming year, we'll have information on our website all the way through, but we know we've got, because we do get them late sometimes, we've got 7 scholarships from one of our alum, Bill Bottrell. We've got 3-4 students from Eastern European countries. Goldman Sachs have just given us 4 awards. The Simon Morris Awards, he is an alum who works for them. So there are plenty of others, including Stelios has just renewed his awards. There are 10 Stelios Awards. So it's worth applying for scholarships. We're looking at a means basis and a needs basis rather than merit. I know some universities offer for good A-level grades or whatever. Because all our students have such good A-level grades, we would find it impossible to do the scholarships on a merit basis. So we do it on need. Oh, I jumped. Just to say also, a lot of our students do work on campus. They increase their income that way. And the job shop that Hannah mentioned, that the careers office run, they will sort out part-time jobs for students. There are a lot of jobs actually within the campus that can fit round studying hours. We also have some hardship funds, and there are some charities and educational trusts who will support. So looking at the part-time work, I think for undergraduates the figure is certainly 75%, and the My Careers job list will enable them to find them. And in the students who are showing you around today, we have a lot of events on campus, I'm sure you know, public lectures and open days like this. So a lot of the work is stewarding at these sort of events, and then obviously there's work in student union shops and bars and so on. We do recommend students shouldn't work more than 15 hours a week, and I think most of them find that that's doable. And then just a little bit about some extra funds before I introduce Emma. We do have a support fund for students who have a difficulty once they arrive, financial difficulties, which they couldn't be anticipated. And obviously that can be something like a problem with your accommodation where you have to suddenly pay a new deposit to move elsewhere, or a problem with the parents' income changing halfway through a year, and there being a need for some supplement to that. So my team have a drop-in every day and see students every day and are able to help with that. And then we talked a bit about the disability service. There are some funds available as well to back up some of the needs that students have. And the government provide funds for students with disability, for any students with children, and students with other dependents that they're looking after. So I've gabbled through that somewhat. The brochure will give you the numbers information, and I am happy to chat to anyone individually at the end, as Kath mentioned, because sometimes with this sort of information you need to take it in a bit and then think what your questions are. But I'm going to hand you on to Emma Deef, who has already had the build-up from Kath, so I'm not going to add any pressure. We look forward to hearing from her.
Thank you, Sue. Well, good morning. Now, I thought, let's get down to what it's really like to have your daughter or son study at LSE. Well, I know that my son is one of the 25% who don't have a job. So after today, I'm going to deal with that one. But anyway, I asked my son, Noah, what I should say as a mother of a student at LSE to the parents of prospective students. Well, his initial reaction was horror, mixed with relief, because then he remembered that today he'd be out of the country on his rugby tour. And then he said to me, whatever you do, Mum, don't cry, because you do cry quite a lot. I said, yep, I know, but, you know, I'm a proud mother. Anyway, but then this was followed by, well, you've got to be honest, but not schmaltzy. So here goes. Well, first of all, we were sitting here where you are as parents a year ago with lots of questions and initial impressions. But first, many congratulations on being offered a place at LSE. You know, it's the best university in the world and you've cracked it. Well done. And as parents, it does feel as if it's us who are going to be starting in September. And our son was, you know, just pretty ecstatic to be offered a place at LSE to study history. He's a bit of a purist. But anyway, all that waiting's over. Now all he had to do was get the grades, no pressure. But then, as parents, there are those inevitable questions, aren't there? Ones that freak me out, which is about leaving home, coming to London to study. After all, it's a big city. Will he be safe? Will he be looked after? What will he do with his washing? What will the accommodation be like? He's never used a washing machine. How will I know what he's up to? And will he enjoy his course? Will it be what he wanted? All those thoughts and concerns that parents have. Well, you know, I do anyway. But one of the mothers who stood here last year, she gave us a wonderful piece of advice. She said, as a parent, yes, you do have all these questions. That's only natural. But when your son or daughter begin their studies here, you have to gracefully begin to resign as a parent manager to becoming a parent advisor. And apparently, she said, that does happen. I'm still struggling to resign from the manager bit. But, you know, apparently it does happen, she promised me. Well, our son lives in an intercollegiate hall of residence called Hughes Parry Hall. And then I found out it's also known as Hughes Party Hall. So I was really kind of freaking out about that. But anyway, never mind, just stay calm. Anyway, he shares a floor with other students from King's College and UCL, as well as other nice LSE students. They are nice. Anyway, initially I was a bit apprehensive because then I thought, well, he won't get the full-on LSE experience. But living in this hall has really brought him lots of benefits. It's broadened his social life, because alongside friends from LSE, he's made friends with King's College students, and I call them Noah and the Three Kings, which I think would be a great musical. But anyway, there's also a tutor, like Hannah was saying, who lives in that hall. So, you know, it's really well run. Anyway, he chose to go for full boards, much to my relief, because he can't cook. I mean, he just can't. So I just thought, well, let's not put the pressure on there. Well, initially, he really threw himself into university life. He joined lots of societies, and there are so many to choose from and so many varied opportunities to be involved with. But in the end, he's actually finally narrowed it down, and he's focused mostly on the History Society, which he's treasurer. I don't think they have a lot of money, but that's not his fault. Anyway, and they are a really nice, small, exclusive group. And the Athletics Union, because he plays rugby, and he plays for the LSE Thirds. Well, they have a great camaraderie, and the latest photograph of them is lovely, but they haven't won a match at all. I don't know what he's doing, but he says it's not his fault. Anyway, he's also learning Russian, like those language schools. That's lovely. And he's hoping to go to a summer school in St. Petersburg this summer. Now, as a history student, his course is really varied academically program. There are loads of options that he can study in history, and they're led by, you know, leading academics who are sort of experts in their field. And he's grown in confidence. He's so laid back and so quiet, but he's really grown in confidence. He takes the lead in classes and debates. And also, if you notice, every time we listen to Radio 4, there's always an LSE person on there, some women's hour, anything like that. I text him, oh, so-and-so's on the radio. He said, and? But anyway, but he does know how privileged he is to be here. But then I think he also discovered that initially, coming from a small school in Portsmouth, a great city, to LSE, he's a small fish in a big city and university. And he told me it took the first term, really, to settle in, to find his way around London, and he doesn't use those crossing buttons, and to get into a routine of study and a social life. He's felt safe here. I mean, that was what I was worried about, big city, but he's felt safe and supported by LSE and the student services that Hannah was talking about. And he studies with students from all around the world who all bring their gifts and remember contacts, you know, for a nice holiday somewhere. Anyway, LSE is a relatively small university, and I really think that's its appeal. And it's a leading world reputation for social sciences. But I just want them to win University Challenge. Wouldn't that be great? But anyway, oh, they've got to be on there. Anyway, the support for students is also an essential part of LSE. They take their students really seriously. And also, as us as parents, we're looked after as well through the Friends and Family newsletter that comes out periodically by email, and that keeps us, you know, a little bit up to date with what's happening at LSE, because he never tells me anything. And also includes invitations and seminars and lectures. And really, LSE, it's a really buzzing and lively university. It's right in the middle of everything, where all the action is. And we're really impressed that our son has sort of embrace London life. Everything is here that you could wish for. I mean, you've got the libraries, museums, theatres, art galleries, fantastic shops. You've got economic and business centres, political life. You know, the list is endless. But I have noticed over this past year, visiting our son here, that you tend to pick up the vibes from the students when you're around and listening. And without exception, they are all extremely focused, mature, and independent, and really friendly and helpful. I mean, the list of alumni, you know, bears witness to that. So if your child does decide, yeah, I'm going to take up that offer and come here, then, you know, really encourage them to sort of embrace all those opportunities that LSD offers, because there's no real place like it here, and you'll really watch them fly. But finally, there's just one vital piece of equipment that all prospective parent advisors and parent managers need, and this is it.
Of the day, and we didn't write her speech at all. No input at all from the official LSE side of things. That was great, thank you. We're pretty much out of time for the main part of the presentation. What I'm going to suggest is, for those of you who do want to head off to another session, to the information stands, please do so. I certainly can hang around for a few more minutes, and so can my colleagues, if you want to ask us any one-to-one questions. But also bear in mind the information stands. There will be people from financial support, from accommodation, from the Disability and Wellbeing Office, from the Students' Union. So if you have any questions specifically about those issues, do bear in mind you can go to an information stand as well as ask us. But thank you very much for your attention. I'm sorry about the light issue, and enjoy the rest of your day.